Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello everyone, this is the new episode of the Deucebacks podcast. We are going to be discussing the preview to the French Open and looking ahead to the main contenders for this Open. This podcast has two guests lined up. One of them is a regular on the Anfield Index Network, Bijan Keswani, who also does the Anfield Index India Football podcast. Hey Bijan, welcome to the podcast, or rather the relaunch of the podcast.
Nice, thanks for having me. Great to be back.
Cool. And joining Bijan, we have a new guest on the Anfield Index Network. His name is Shankar. He's a certified Rafael Nadal fan. So it's going to be an interesting one, French Open, Rafael Nadal. So I think this is the right podcast to bring him in. Hey, Shankar, thanks for joining in.
Hi, yes. Nice to be here. Thank you.
So we are going to get right into the podcast because we have lots of things to talk, certain new developments which have happened in the last week, including the draw and not mentioning the Agassi issue. So the first thing we are going to talk, obviously, is the Sharapova one not getting a wild card. So Shankar, coming to you, since you haven't had the take on the ban, would you agree that the ban was farcical, as a lot of people who did when we last did this podcast?
I think the ban was half-heartedly imposed. They wanted to come down strict on her, but they were also considering the fact that she's a major draw. And because of that, they kind of ended up doing neither, a little bit of both. So the ban was not well implemented, I would say. I think she was fully deserving of the penalty. I mean, the fact that she didn't know it, or the fact that the rules changed on Jan 1st, those are very, very flimsy excuses. That's why these people have entourages. And just the fact that no other top tennis player has been careless enough to let this happen shows how attentive they are. So yeah, the ban wasn't satisfying, but the fact that she didn't get a wild card was.
And do you think it's what the French Open organizers have done? They have gone beyond the call of duty, because you say it's very easy to give her a wild card. There are a few tournaments which have given her, though she's not performed well, but that is the only reason you would give a wild card. But we also know that the French Open crowds aren't exactly tolerative. They do boo a lot of players if they show like bad sportsmanship even on the court. So do you think it's taken a bit of guts from the French Open organizers?
Yeah, I think so. I do think so, because also, they're the first major tournament that's coming up after she's finished serving out her ban. So I think Wimbledon and the US Open or whatever else would have taken a lead from their pages. And to say clearly that your ban is not like somebody who's come back from injury, or someone like Kvitova whose injury was ranking was protected, I think it's a good sign. I think the rest of the tour will also feel happy that, you know, you can't just serve out a ban and then get some sort of preferential treatment. That's completely at odds with the punishment you're serving also.
Indeed, indeed. So, Bijan, bringing you in here, your opening comments about the comeback of Sharapova. Have you seen her play? How do you think she's playing? And your take on French Open not giving her a wild card?
No, I'm glad. So, I remember you and I had a chat a while ago about how the 2 year was a little odd anyway. And then it was obviously reduced even further. But I'm glad that a lot of at least the French Open, for example, has taken the stand to say that we're not going to get her the wild card, and therefore go through the regulars and need to do it, right? So I'm glad with that, because it kind of stop any and all forms of cheating in any way, you know, anywhere form, whether it's a mistake, whether she wants to plead negligence, whatever the situation might be. So I'm glad that the French Open is taking that stand. The others obviously haven't in terms of their wildcards they've given her now. I think she's even got one at the Rogers Cup. So that's obviously an issue because she's a huge draw, considering Williams is also going to be out for a while. Azarenka is still a yes, no. She's on plan for Wimbledon, which is a development this week. Kvitova is back, but there's technically she's still the most commercially viable draw. So a lot of them will still give her the wild cards. I'm not too supportive of that. If you're good enough to join the qualifiers, it's an extra week of tennis. You should be good enough to get into the main draw any which way. Take the hit for the year and then do well.
I do side with that opinion as well. And since she has so much delta points, so even a half good tournament should give her a lot of points, because literally her base effect is zero. So there are lots of points to be taken in. But we are going to swiftly move over from Sharapova to the other big news, which has emerged pre-French Open. And we are not talking Djokovic news yet. We are going to talk about the Federer pullout. So what better than to start with Shankar, who's a Nadal fan. Shankar, was Federer the real big obstacle for Nadal winning the French Open again?
I don't think so. But at the same time, after he won Australia, I remember telling someone that I think he could win a lot of tournaments this year. And given the relative lack of consistency among anyone else on clay, he might have thought about it. But I think the last 6 months when he took off before winning Australia and then playing through the summer in the US, winning those two Masters tournaments, he has really decided that he wants to play for a long time rather than just play as many tournaments as he can. So while I don't think he was a big obstacle for Nadal at the French, Nadal's number one obstacle is Djokovic. I think his not playing the French probably is a smart decision.
Do you think it's perfectly okay that he targets winnable tournaments?
I think he's earned the right. The guy's been playing for 20 years. He's not some up-and-coming player. I mean, we allowed it when Monica Seles did it. They're individuals. They pay a price. If they don't play a tournament, they lose in the rankings. So if Federer is okay with that, he's fine. And for a while, he said that he was going to play only the French, which was just ridiculous, because to go in on the biggest clay court event, and clay is distinctly different from any other surface on the tour in that you have to have matches under your belt. Otherwise, you're just going to show up to make up the numbers. So I think there he was being a bit delusional, saying that he could play. I mean, I don't think he was really going to do that. So he's fine. Wimbledon, he's a genuine favorite. He would still be, to me, the favorite at Wimbledon now.
Especially considering the rest.
Correct.
Okay, Bijan, your take on the Federer pullout. What do you think? Your opinion, obviously he's earned the right, as Shankar said, but were you a bit disappointed that he's not played, or it's perfectly understandable?
No, I think there are two different things. Am I disappointed he's not playing? Obviously, because I just want to see fantastic tennis and the guy's still capable of pulling up top draw stuff. So, am I disappointed he's not there? You know, yes, but is it a good call for him? Obviously, because he wants to continue. He sort of realized that sticking to the baseline, faster courts are the way to go. The clay season is excruciatingly painful for the body because the transition in your legs needs to be a lot more different. You need to put on, you know, muscle mass. You need to put on weight for your legs to be able to, you know, take the impact of clay season. And it's not one tournament. So it's not like, you know, you get to, there's very little variation between the hard courts versus the clays. You know, the clays are different. The nature is different. So the impact on the body is a lot more different in the shorter period of time. That is the clay season. So it's perfectly fair. He wants to protect his body. And when you don't back yourself to win a Grand Slam, because I'm not saying that he's not capable of course he is, but you wouldn't back yourself against someone like Nadal to beat him in a French Open final. But if you want to protect your body, you or Roger Federer, you can technically do anything in the sport that you want. So fair enough, save yourself clay season. It's not going to hurt you too much. You've achieved your goals on clay. Let's move on and target Wimbledon.
Yeah, that sounds perfect to me as well. But this though Shankar wouldn't agree otherwise, this opens up totally for Nadal. He's been in form, slight hiccup in the last tournament before French. But Shankar, what's changed for Nadal this year? He seems fit. His hunger seems to be back, and he looks as good as ever. Though you might think there are a few more levels to go up then?
Yeah, he's fitter. I think he's injury free. Coming back from an injury, we know it's difficult, especially for him, although he has a lot of experience. And I think what players have is when after they come back from injury for a little while, they will be a little bit tentative. And being tentative doesn't work for a defensive player like Nadal, because if you're at least an aggressive player, you're owning the court, you're going to the forecourt, and you're driving the points. Nadal generally does like to step behind the baseline and dictate a rally. And if you look at a lot of his losses in the last 2 years, he was pushed off court by power hitters, Pui and Kyrgios and Fognini. All these guys play incredible shots, and they're good to watch unless you're on the other side of the court. And now he's stronger again. He's had a good run in Australia. He had a good run at Miami. He reached another final where he lost to Sam Querrey. So he's been making the rounds. He's been putting in the miles in his legs. Nadal, more than most players on the tour, he needs matches more than anything else. The more he plays, the better he gets. And he was always going to play these four clay court tournaments. I wish he'd played one less, but that's up to him. So I think the more he's played, then the stronger he's felt. He's been able to play his game. And he's been, I guess, the dominant player of the clay court season so far.
Indeed. Bijan, what do you make of his resurgence this year, Nadal's resurgence?
Yeah, so I agree with Shankar in terms of him being largely injury-free. One must remember that, you know, over the years, he's always had a knee and a hip problem. So if you guys have read his book, because of his foot soles, he tends to have that issue. And this is the first time in such a long career that he's taken a break wherein that has not been the injury. So the legs have got rest, the knees have got rest, and he solved a problem in his wrist, which he had, you know, for about 3-4 months. From the year-end tournament onwards, yeah, last year. So he has been able to recover. And the problem with, because his game style is so dependent on his grip and the heaviness in the wrist, so he needs a proper wrist to be able to even compete at a half-decent level. So that was, that's a good sign. And also a lot of his resurgence has got to do with the fact that in the Australian Open, he's come back towards the baseline. He's come a lot closer. The game against Zverev, he was a lot closer to the baseline. A long, hard game. Then he had the big game against Raonic, which was something that he's typically, you know, not done too well against with regards to big servers, big game players. So he came closer to the baseline. He cut down angles. He cut down pace. And then basically just defended really well and then converted that into attacks properly. So a lot of his resurgence is to do with the fact that he's injury free and he's gone into a little more of an attacking mentality because that's the only way he can actually get out of any of the situations.
Indeed, it's you could say it's ironic, but it's also good that we are actually talking about Nadal and attacking play. So, Shankar, do you agree? Nadal, has he got a bit more attacking or even a bit more efficient, would you put it like that?
Yeah, I think he himself pointed to the fact that the balls have become lighter over the last few years and he needed to adjust his game according to that. He couldn't expect the opponents to stay in rallies as longer because opponents were realizing that they can take the ball early and dictate the points. So he's definitely got better court position, at least he did in Australia. He has, on some of the clay court matches I've seen, once in a while he'll fall back to where he is most comfortable, which is way, way back in the, almost in the royal box. But otherwise, he has definitely taken a better aggressive position. He also mentioned another technical thing. Nadal said that he has added some weight to the tip of his racket, which gives him a little more power in his shots and a bit more power in his serve. And I think his serving is a little better than it has been in the last couple of years. But I don't know if that is just a result of the confidence and the other parts of the game or whether he has significantly worked on that part of his game.
Something we are going to be watching out in the next 2 weeks. But the resurgence of the veterans also has coincided with the dip in form for Murray and Djokovic. Let's take Djokovic first. So, Bijan, the big news this week, temporary at least, but again, another superstar comes back as a coach or at least a part-time coach come mentor for a leading player. Now it's the turn of Andre Agassi. So Djokovic mentioned about how this happened by chance. He actually just wanted to make a phone call with Agassi, at least thank him for the constant support over the years. And then suddenly they went over all the technical things. And then this has been the end result. So what do you make of the news? Super excited, though it's part time or it's just a wait and watch for you?
It is a wait and watch, you know, because It's not like Agassi always had the best temperament, right? So if Djokovic is suffering from anything other than motivation and temperament, I'm not sure how Agassi helps there because he's always been an aggressive, loudmouth kind of character off court. So it'll be really interesting unless obviously the Steffi Graf effect has come in and he's become a lot calmer and this is just, you know, a smokescreen for Steffi being the coach. But no, I'm just kidding there. It'll just be interesting. It'll be good to see. both baseliners, both very good with the return. Agassi in his day was probably the best returner serve ever. But it is still a wait and see. I think with Djokovic, it's just about the confidence. He's won everything that there is. Is there more motivation to be able to go out there and keep getting stuff? You know, we saw him. We just assumed that once Nadal lost to Thiem at Rome, he would kind of click into gear and win that tournament at least. But unfortunately, he didn't. He got beaten by a younger Zverev. You know, obviously Zverev is incredibly talented, but you just assume that he would win Rome once Nadal dropped out. But I think it's just a motivation thing. He's won everything that there is. Maybe he was at peak performance for too long that the body's kind of giving in, but you don't necessarily see signs of that. He just seems a little sluggish. So I'm hoping that this is just, you know, one of those things that at least bumps up his motivation level. And then maybe we can see what his fitness and what his regular temperament on court, you know, is. Because in the past few tournaments, he hasn't started off the blocks too quickly, which he was always known to do. When he was at peak performance, he would, against players in rank lower, he would just go at them, close out games really quickly. But he's been easing into a lot of games and then pinching the sets between, you know, games 8 and 10. That's where he sort of made his move, where earlier he wouldn't do that. He tried to go for it initially because he obviously felt confident, was physically fit, technically superior. But now it's the first sort of setback for Djokovic since he got so good. So it'll always be interesting to see how he gets back to what we want his level to be.
So Djokovic also talked about the fact that Agassi has gone through what he's going through, which is basically a mid-career slump. So Shankar, what do you make of the news? And more importantly, why do you think Djokovic has struggled? Is it just due lack of motivation, as Bjorn seems to suggest, is the major reason?
I think the reason he struggled was because he had won Wimbledon in 2011, the Australian Open in 2008, and the US Open in 2011. So from 2012, he has been trying to win the French Open assiduously to complete that career Grand Slam. And he got close a couple of times. Once he was up a break against Nadal, he touched the net and lost the point and went on to lose the match. That was a great match. One year, he beat Nadal and then lost to Wawrinka. So he really kept on putting more and more pressure on himself to win the French. And when he won the French, that day last year when he beat Murray, he was the first person since Rod Laver to hold all four titles. He had won 28 straight Grand Slam singles titles. And so he had kind of reached the acme of his goals. Unfortunately for him, there was another Grand Slam coming up in 2 or 3 weeks. And I really think one of the bigger things was he didn't have time to let it soak in. What he had achieved, even Laver had not achieved, because Laver won it when it was being played on two surfaces, I think. And Djokovic won four slams on three surfaces. So credit where credit is due. And I don't think he had time to just, you know, sit back and enjoy it. If he had won anything else, Australia, Wimbledon, or the US, to win the career Grand Slam, he would have had a little bit more time. And I really think that's where he stumbled. Suddenly he was back on court, he had to get motivated, and he was struggling. He had won Wimbledon three times, he'd won the Open twice, he'd won the Australian Open six times. So everything else was like, been there, done that many times. And he fell back, he fell off a little bit. I mean, people talk about the slump, it's a slump by his standards, I would say. The really bad result was Australia and Wimbledon. He reached the US Open Finals. He reached the tour finals. He won Toronto. He beat Murray at the start of this year. And he was having a middling clay court season until the last tournament, until Rome. But yeah, so I think all the signs are there now. So it was just kind of, he hit a wall. He'd achieved everything and he had no time to, you know, really celebrate in any level.
And the Agassi news, obviously this broke out this week.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. But again, I'll be the first one to say that I didn't think Becker was a good choice, because I was wondering why a guy with slams could help a guy with eight slams or whatever he had at that time. I wasn't very sure, but well and good. That worked brilliantly. And I think Djokovic is the kind of person who needs to make a big change in order for him to get motivated again, you know. Agassi has clicked with him, great, you know, and he likes having someone charismatic in his corner. He will pick into that brain. Agassi is known to be a very good student of the game. He knows a lot of stuff. He knows how to beat people who are bigger than him, more powerful than him, and not that Novak has any of those problems, but Andre knows how to win, so good for him. But how it's going to work, I have no clue, and I'm not going to bet on it. Just wait and watch.
But also, Sri, yeah, if I may add to that, you know, let's be honest, right? We have been, for the past 10, 15 years even maybe, we have been spoiled with absolute with two of the greatest champions in world sport, period. Right? You've got Federer, who never seemed to have broke, I mean, just had incredible results for a long period of time. Now is at 18. You have Nadal, who's at 15, who was just so dominant for a period of 3-4 years, again, peak performance. And this is the first time you've seen someone, because you assume Djokovic just didn't drop up, right? You just never thought that that would happen. And because it's happened, it's also such a surprise, right? But we've been really spoiled with the level of tennis over the past, 10 years. So it was bound to happen. It happened with Federer when he had his back issues, didn't make a semi-final for a while. It happened with Nadal. Obviously injury related, and now it's happened with Djokovic as well. So it's a bit of a, it is okay for it to happen, right? And therefore, maybe it shouldn't be expected, but it's just what it is. People get old, they get tired, and you've won a lot that you may have never thought that you would. So it's a bit of both.
Yeah, indeed. So we have talked Djokovic and Agassi. So let's go to the other contenders. Bijan, I'm going to stick with you. Andy Murray. He seems to be in a bigger slump, you could say, than Djokovic. So what's gone wrong? I don't think motivation is an issue for him, though.
No, but with Andy, it's always been about mentality, right? Like, there's so much with him that is external. His girlfriend blowing her bit in the box, annoys him. Ivan Lendl not saying anything or not reacting used to annoy him. So a lot of him and his performance is down to where he is in a mental state. If he's feeling good, which you realize that he was feeling after Wimbledon, the Olympics, that period of time, he felt good. He was aggressive. He was talking about it. Because again, he's not a very vocal character. Right? He sounds boring and typically he sounds very British, but he is. But with him, it's always just the mentality. If he's there mentally, he can compete, right? But if he's not there and if he thinks he's going to stroll into parks and then get stuff done, he will get beat, right? So it's just mental with him. Then that's the only thing. I mean, he's arguably amongst the four, he is the fittest. It's been proven year on year. His fitness levels are incredible. Even after his back injury, he can withstand a lot more than probably the other three can. So with him, it's not a physical issue at all. He very rarely has dips and troughs during matches, right? There's been the odd one that's gone to about 5 odd hours, but you don't ever count on him breaking down physically. It's the first time that, his back gave him an issue and then he'd returned from that solid as ever. But with him, it's all about what's in the head. If he can control his mind, if he can control his mentality, then he sort of does well. And that's the bigger problem that he's having. I think being number one and therefore the expectation that comes with it is probably wearing him down.
So, Shankar, do you agree that the number one, being number one is what is wearing him down, to just summarize?
Yes, I think he's had the worst 6 months of a number one in the men's game that I can remember since I've started watching tennis. He's been really poor and I don't see anything in him physically to suggest that he's having struggles. I've always felt that after Federer, he's the most talented, and that kind of works against him sometimes in that he doesn't know which game to play or what shot to play. But he's just looked really flat. His big disappointment result this year was in Australia. He's always had a reasonably average clay court season. I don't think he's ever done anything great, except for last year when he reached the finals and he won Madrid or Rome. One of them he won. But apart from that, he's never had outstanding results on clay. So even now, I think he'll go into the French, he'll talk a nice game, and he's a big match player. He could well make it to the second week, but I don't think he will go that far in Paris, and I think he's probably got one eye on the grass already.
So do you think grass is going to be the redemption, or do you actually, is, because for him, I'm quite not able, as both of you, I'm not able to actually identify what's going wrong. Is it just the surface which is going to bring, because you cannot be a number one if you are going to wait till Wimbledon to have a good part of your season there. So I'm not quite sure. Are we actually saying his familiar or the a surface which has given him great memories, that is what is needed to kickstart his season?
No, I don't think it's the surface. I think it's being back in England. He really works off that crowd better than anywhere else in the world. He's, even when he was up and coming, he'd have better results at Wimbledon than other tournaments. So I think that's his hope. I mean, if he can't get it up during Wimbledon and he loses to some Misha Zverev or something, then he's in full-blown crisis mode. and he'll have to do something drastic.
I'm actually quite surprised you said that, you know, he feeds off the crowd, because so many times he just collapses because of the, well, maybe not crowd expectation, because they always want the best, but the media expectation back in England. So it's really surprising that you actually say that, you know, he'll probably feed off that environment once he gets back. Because the media just puts in so much pressure on any half-decent Brit talent that they have. They seem to just crumble underneath that. But in terms of, I would just say that his game, and therefore, like, he's suited better to the grass courts. And that's where he, like, a faster court is obviously better for him, because he has a bit of a counter-punching game rather than generating a lot of pace of his own.
I don't think I've ever seen him crumble under the media pressure. I may be wrong, but I've always seen him play in Wimbledon, at Wimbledon, at those courts, and get really revved up, center court. I can remember a few matches. There was one against Grosjean a few years ago, and more than one, where he's really fed off that energy and done well. And I've never seen him do the same thing in any other court anywhere else in the world. He's always kind of an angry person on court, yelling and shouting. That's fine. I mean, that is what he is. We can't pick and choose our great players. But I think the combination of the grass, good memories, and the crowd there is what he has to hope, what I think will turn it, because I'm really stumped as to why he's struggling so much. Yes, there was an injury that he pulled out of Miami with, and maybe that can allow his performance in the first clay court tournament to not go well. But these guys are good enough where when they come back, they're really fit. They're not carrying an injury anymore. So why he's doing so poorly this year, we can only put it down to the 1-1 ranking. I don't see any other reason.
We have a kind of a consensus, though it's a small panel, that it's indeed the ranking which is pulling him down. So we've talked enough of the men's side. Let's talk about the unpredictable side currently. No Williams, no Sharapova. Bijan, women's side, is there a clear favorite?
Absolutely not. None of there ever been a clear favorite. No, but I mean, it's surprising, right? The woman's she's gonna go have a kid, she's gonna come back, she's gonna win another 3-4, because there's just absolutely no competition. Like, there is no one at her level, and even the person that probably just a couple of notches lower, probably be an Azarenka or a Kvitova, and they are sometimes they just have one-off days, right? So they're very consistently great over a full season. So as usual, we go into the French wondering and hoping and trying to find who's in form and who might be great and who might not be. And it's such a relief to have Kvitova back, because you suddenly have a name that, you know, by brand name could technically win a Grand Slam. But as usual, otherwise, we're just scraping for names.
Is she officially in? Because I haven't followed up on the news in the last couple of days. Is she officially in the tournament?
Who is this?
Kvitova.
Yes, Kvitova. She is. She's 15th seed or something. So, yeah, her seeding has been protected, yeah.
That's good. That's good to hear. But in respect to her, okay, you could not say a clear favorite, but is Halep one of the contenders? Shankar, I'm going to come to you on this.
Halep was the contender until 2 days ago when she twisted her ankle. Yeah. But no, I would say even now she is the contender. If she says she's fit enough to play, then she's not going to be unfit. She's not going to be able to struggle on court. I think she'll be okay.
She may need a couple of early good rounds, though.
Yeah,
easier ones, preferably.
Hopefully, yeah. I think Halep and Mladenovic, the French player, those two are the. You don't want to use the word favorites. They're not favorites the way Nadal is the favorite in the men's tournament. But those two are probably the most favored to reach the finals. But again, like I said, it's really tough to pick. I mean, Bijan said it. I think you can probably pick the finalists the day after the finals. That's when you'll be sure. Before that, up in the air. Muguruza has a chance, yes. I think she's not had a bad year, but she hasn't had a good year, and it depends on how she does well here. She's a favorite and she's defending champion. She's beaten Serena twice in 3 years on the clay, so she should be confident. But I think, I don't know if she's going to go far. Like she's like any other woman on the tour. She's really, this is a weird time in women's tennis, because either the top teams are injured or out for whatever reasons. You have Sharapova, Serena Williams, and Azarenka out for different reasons. And then the ones who are in, they're kind of injured and coming in off minor concerns or major concerns, depending on how big the injury is. So if I had to stick my neck out, Halep, Mladenovic, they are luckily in the opposite half, so they could make the finals. Apart from that, Kuznetsova is dark horse, I would say. She generally does well. She plays punches above her weight.
What about Pliskova?
Kova, I don't know how well she's done on the clay. She's good, but I don't expect her to go very far in this tournament.
Couple of opens, Madrid, she struggled, but I think she had a decent Italian Open, I think. I don't recollect where did she progress. I think she made it till the quarterfinal, I think.
Oh, well,
but half of the names I don't seem to even recognize, so I should not be even talking about the contenders.
Think about the women's game is that if you're a top player and you have that confidence, then you can play the same on any surface. I mean, in the women's, it's less defined that you can be dominant on other surfaces and struggle on clay because they can kind of play well enough to beat somebody on the clay itself. So, Pliskova is a confident player. She's a rhythm player. She plays well. She's tough to beat.
She was actually seeded 2 in the Italian Open.
Oh, that's because, wow.
But still,
yeah. Kerber didn't play.
But still, number 2?
Yeah, she's top 5, I think, isn't
world
she?
Number 3, I think.
Pliskova is number 3. Yeah. Pliskova is world number 3. But you see, the thing with Pliskova's game is so many, her dominant performances have always come outside of clay. And the problem, I mean, the reason, a really big reason of that is that she has a monster serve. It is an absolutely huge serve to have. But when you're on clay, a fast serve doesn't get you much, right? Because if you don't get the depth off of it, it just pops up, right? And therefore becomes easier for the likes of a big hitter and therefore a half-decent mover to kind of get into a better position to deal with that. The one big game that I'm looking forward to in the women's row is the first round, which is Kerber versus Makarova. Because Makarova has been such a wild card over the years. It's just been, you know, you don't really know what you're going to get from her. She'll have a beautiful Wimbledon, invariably. She'll have a great Wimbledon tournament, and she dies out before that. I mean, after that. That's the first big game that I'm looking forward to in the women's group. But otherwise, I think we just probably go into the likes of Garbine and yeah, probably Garbine would be for me. Garbine and Halep.
See, I'll tell you why this side of the women's side is so screwed up. Sharapova is in there. Williams is out. Garbine hasn't won in the clay season until Rome, but I think she injured herself in Rome. I'm not sure if she's fit. She had an injury in the semifinals, I think.
Neck injury.
Yeah, Kerber hasn't won the French Open at all. And though she's won 2 Open, she hasn't won any tournament since the last US Open, I think. Pliskova hasn't won French either, and she says this is not her favorite surface. She says talking about the title is too far off. So half the people either don't have the form or are ruling themselves out. So I don't know who's going to win. So are we in for again an unknown person coming to the final and winning it? Or at least not that any of the top ranks. Quite possible, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah,
I think even if Mladenovic wins outside the tennis tour, she's quite unknown. I mean, even though people don't even know she's French, they think she's Czechoslovakian or something like that. So yeah, Kerber, she's had as bad a year as number one as Murray has had. So between them, they've really kind of brought down the number one ranking. She's struggled again. No one knows what the reasons are, but she's maybe last year was a peak for Kerber. I don't think the same is true for Murray. But Kerber versus Makarova is definitely the one match in the first round to watch for. Makarova has got, I think, 2 Grand Slam semis. She's definitely a dangerous player. How she'll play on that day, nobody knows. But I think all the women should feel equally confident going into the French Open. None of them should think they can't win. Because if you look at the draw, there's no titans. There's nothing insurmountable in that draw at all for them.
Bijan, you also wanted to add in something here, right?
No, it's just the same thing. It's good to have Kvitova back because that's the only big name that you're probably looking forward to. Right? It's Kerber and Kvitova. If I'm not mistaken, those are the only two that have a Grand Slam under their belt in the entire draw.
But can she do it?
Kuznetsova, Venus.
Yeah, but then again, Kuznetsova, Venus are on the wrong side of 50, and therefore you're never really counting on them to do fantastically well. But I could be wrong. It's happened
but
before.
Has Kvitova though played any tournaments? I've not followed it.
No.
So
she's just recovered from
Kvitova is just back. She's just playing. So
correct.
Nobody has
expected. So obviously
like any other woman at the tournament, she's
correct.
Not going to win.
She's just a big draw. That's all. So nobody
yeah,
is expecting
just
her to.
Yeah, just a big draw. Yeah, absolutely. Just a big draw. It's just that, you know, you right now you'd probably go back to the names that Shankar said only because of form. And even if you're adding another name to that, it's not form. It's just because they might have had a decent season before that, you know. So it's just the odd name here and there. But as usual, we go into surprises with
yeah. I'm telling you, with the form, there's so much oscillation of yo-yoing of form. I'm not going to rule out even Kvitova having a good tournament. It's perfectly plausible. She has 2 good early rounds where she gets a couple of sets on, maybe slight bit of work. She settles in, considers almost the first 2 rounds become like some kind of a warm up for her. There's nothing ruled out even for her.
Absolutely, I agree with you. And Kvitova and Muguruza are the only 2 players in the world who have won a Grand Slam after being born in the 90s. There's nobody in the men's and there's nobody else in the women's. I think this week we had a landmark where all the top 5 men are also over 30 years old now. So it's a sign of the times. So Kvitova has not as good a chance as Halep, but she's also, I don't think she has no chance. You're right.
Indeed. But Bijan, I'm going to come to you. Shankar already mentioned the draw, so let's just get right into it. Let's look at the men's side. Potential mouth-watering or the big headline from the draw seems to be Nadal versus Djokovic coming in the semi-final. So otherwise, any highlights you have from the men's side of the draw?
Oh yeah, I mean, even if you look at before you get to the semis, your possible quarterfinals are Mare Nishikori. Right? Nishikori is an interesting one because he's coming back of injury and just lost to Misha Zverev yesterday or day before. You've got Wawrinka Cilic is the other quarter. And then you've got Raonic Nadal. You fancy Nadal. But the most interesting quarter is TM Djokovic.
Indeed. And
so all going well, you have a TM Djokovic final. Quarter. And then you just assume that one of them will probably... the problem is either of them after that game, a TM Djokovic game could potentially become five. How many people are going to be capable of beating Djokovic and Nadal in back-to-back games is going to be really, really surprising. It'll be incredible if someone does that. That's the interesting.
Shankar, I'm going to come to you since we talked about Thiem before. So Thiem basically has to go to Djokovic in the quarters and Nadal in the semifinal if he does make it.
Yeah, Thiem also has to beat David Goffin in the fourth round, which is no easy thing on clay this year.
Basically, a draw of death then for him.
It's a tough one. Some other matches that could happen is Murray could face Del Potro in the third round. And given the way Murray is playing, I think he'll make it to the third round, but he could play Del Potro or Almagro. That should be interesting. John Isner is in his 16th in that, and Isner has a very good record on clay as opposed to other surfaces, which is weird. Another player you're not talking about is we're talking about Murray playing Nishikori, but Nishikori would have to beat Zverev in the fourth round. And this is the same Zverev who just dusted Djokovic at Rome.
Come to that. Has anybody tracked Zverev's draw?
So Alex Zverev's first game is Fernando Verdasco.
Yeah, I think he'll have enough game to beat Verdasco. Verdasco is a wild card. Obviously, nobody wants to play him ever, anywhere, on any surface.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys But I think Zverev will beat him, because Zverev is really a big game. I mean, when he shook hands with Djokovic at the net, he's that much bigger than Djokovic, who himself is 6'2". So I think Zverev is probably my favorite to come out from that quarter, and not Murray, and not Nishikori. Nishikori's been very poor this last few months. If you go to the next quarter, you have Wawrinka, you have Fonini in that same quarter, and then you have Tsonga, Kyrgios, those guys are interesting. Cilic, but Cilic again has underperformed. In that quarter, if I had to pick someone, I would say either Stan or Fonini. There could be a match against Stan versus Fonini, which should be a blockbuster. Again, Fonini is a loose cannon. But he knows he's playing well. If he kind of stays focused, he could get that far.
That's the problem. He doesn't seem to recognize when he plays well.
Correct. The third quarter, well, Nadal dominates that quarter. The other names who can do well are... Nadal has an interesting first round against Benoit Paire, the Frenchman who plays all sorts of weird shots that even he gets amazed by. I think he'll have a few short of the days on the ATP tour, but he won't win the match. The other guy on that quarter is Pablo Carreño Busta, who had a very good clay court season. And he could probably take out someone like Raonic, who is scheduled to play in the third or fourth round. So, but Nadal from that quarter, for sure. And then from the fourth quarter, that's the richest. You have Thiem, you have Goffin, you have Djokovic. I would expect Djokovic gets through all his challenges up to the fourth round of the quarterfinals. He'd be playing far better. It would make it that much more difficult for someone like a Thiem or a Goffin. Goffin, he'll overpower. Thiem psychologically is done. He's not there where he thinks he can beat Djokovic. After losing at Rome, 6-love, 6-1, he said, my game doesn't match well, I can't play him, or something like that, which is very negative. So if Thiem played Djokovic, I would expect Djokovic to win that, assuming the other stuff, the winner of that, they know all.
So your four semifinalists, let's get on with it. So you have Djokovic, Nadal, basically, and then?
Yeah. The other side is Zverev and Stan, I think, yeah.
Zverev and Stan. And Bijan, your four names for semifinals.
No, I have to agree. I agree with that. If Thiem doesn't beat Djokovic, that's the four.
Indeed. So women's side, is it even worthwhile going through it?
Sure, why not? It's got to be 100-1.
I think if we talk top eight, we will have a better chance of being accurate rather than top two.
Yeah, women's draw is going to be fun. It's going to be like, I'm trying to think. There was some, I don't remember a women's slam being this open ever. I mean, it's It's not just Serena gone. Serena gone is one part of it, but it's like we don't even know who's going to reach the other finals.
The problem is nobody is playing well. That's the issue.
Exactly. And the ones who are playing well are so inexperienced. Like, for example, Mladenovic is doing well. Halep is doing well. But we don't know how they'll respond to be under the favoritism of being the favorite in a Grand Slam, how they'll perform under that. So we have to see that also.
Okay. So the last kind of usual stuff we do, John, you will be used to it. Men's champion, shout out women's champion. The big surprise from men's side and the big surprise from women's side.
Okay, men's champion, I'm a little biased there. So men's champion is going to be Nadal. Women's is going to be Garbin. I think men's surprise, Zverev, Alex Zverev. And then women's will probably be, okay, let me say Kvitova.
Ooh, that's nice. That's nice. Shankar, same questions.
Men's champion Zverev, same thing.
You are just trying to anti-jinx, right?
No. If you look at Zverev against Nadal, okay, the first time he played him last year, he had match point and he put away a dumb volley into the net and lost. Then he played him at the Australian Open and he had his number. He could have beaten him, but he cramped and he didn't know how to play him. So and he lost him at Monte Carlo. And you know what he did? He entered the draw in Barcelona so that he could get another chance to play Nadal. And he's beaten Djokovic on clay. I don't think Zverev is lacking in confidence or game. The only question for him is how he'll handle 6-5 setters or 7-5 setters. But I think he's ready. I really do. His reactions, his responses. I mean, I want Nadal to win, yes. But it would be difficult to be sad that a man has only won tournament 9 times. But I think this might be the time for Zverev.
So you're sticking with him to win?
Yes.
And okay, the women's side?
Women's side, I think Mladenovic, I think I'm pronouncing it wrong. Mladenovic to beat Halep in the finals. And the surprise will be Venus to reach semis.
And men's side surprise, any chance of someone actually saying Del Potro?
Del Potro is a good chance for, say, the quarters, I would say, yeah.
So would that be a surprise for him? If he makes it to the quarters?
Given his ranking, yes. Given his potential, yes. I think if he reached the quarters at Paris, it would be a big surprise.
I'm still waiting for the day Raonic does something useful. So we'll continue sticking to that. But it's...
No, so Sri, you go for it. I want to hear your four. You've put us on the spot. Now it's about time you put yourself on the spot.
Nadal is going to win. If Halep is fit and gets through the first two rounds, I think Halep might win. Men's side... I'm going for Del Potro as the surprise, and then the women's side, I'm going for Pliskova. She seems to rule herself out, though she's high ranked, but in terms of her affinity towards the service, it's at the as low as it can get. She seems to practically rule herself out, saying thinking about the title is like too far, but let's see. I think she might have a good tournament if she starts. The French Open, that's the problem. You need to have a good start. So those are the four names I'm going to come up with. But we are going almost done with time. Any closing comments, Bijan? I'm going to come to you.
No, none. I'm just glad that Grand Slam season is back. I genuinely love the French Open. I've seen the clay live. It is a beautiful place to be. So may the games begin.
And Shankar?
I hope I'm wrong. I hope Nadal wins. But I don't think... there's something about Zverev that I really think his time has come. So I hope he doesn't have enough to beat Rafa. But if he does, he'll definitely be a worthy champion. Every time I've seen him play, I've been impressed.
Indeed. So I think we'll soon know. We'll be back with the review once the French Open is done. We'll also be looking ahead to the Wimbledon tournament, where hopefully Federer is back and is definitely back. Touchwood. But any comments from feedback, any comments, please let us know. Anything you want us to discuss in the upcoming podcast. This is going to be far more regular. Yes, I know I promised this before as well, but this time I'm going to try and keep up my word. So any comments, feedbacks, do let us know. Till next time, see you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.